You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It is your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 12th of March, 2024. Later on Market Day, we'll speak with Scott Phillips from The Motley Fool for his take on the day on the markets. But first to iron ore prices, which slumped more than 7% overnight, now below $100 per ton. For more, Raina Bosch spoke with Justin Smirk, a senior economist at Westpac.
So, Justin, iron ore prices continuing along this slump. We've seen a massive decline of about 7%, which is the sharpest decline since mid-2022. Can you talk us through why this is all happening?
Well, actually, they've come a lot further. They were $121 a ton not that long ago, and now they're down to $108 a ton. So they've seen quite a large slide over the last 2-3 weeks. And it's really the sort of coming together of a couple of different forces. One is the sort of ongoing lack of growth and demand from Chinese steel production. Remembering that Chinese steel production peaked back in 2020, it's really been the cycle around the housing story that's been some effort to recover it. A lot of disappointment came out of the National People's Congress, where even though there's lots of hints that this wouldn't happen, the market had an expectation that there'd be sort of a bit more of a sort of bazooka type effort to try and get the economy going, rather than this structural changing that we're seeing more happening now. And also in the backdrop, even though supplies of iron ore out of Australia have been quite lackluster, Brazil has been making up the gap. So supplies have been rising. And in the nexus of that, we've seen inventories at Chinese ports rising again, and now the highest they've been for over a year. Put all together, soft demand, rising volumes of supply, threats of increasing supply from non-traditional sources such as India and Africa, are all putting a dampener on prices and pushing them down. So that's really the backdrop to the fall.
Now, you mentioned China there, and obviously, as you say, demand is kind of on the down low over there. What does it say more broadly about the Chinese economy, and are you expecting things to pick up?
We are looking for a pickup in the Chinese economy. I mean, we're not looking for that kind of sort of spur back that they have sort of done in the past. It's a much more structural change. They are getting their property market into sort of some sort of more order. You've seen declining interest rates, both in overall interest rates and in mortgage rates. You've seen some restructuring around the construction industry, which is helping to sort of stabilize that. So they're two key factors that are helping. The other one is the sort of restructuring and moving of the Chinese economy overall, moving towards more high value type products. And in the backdrop is ongoing infrastructure build that is needed for, you know, trains, bridges, airports, all the kind of things that build up a middle class, a middle income country. So those factors are still in the backdrop and providing some degree of support. And we think on the back of this, Chinese economy will recover and provide some support on from the demand front. But again, it's not a bazooka type of result. We're not talking about that pushing iron ore prices back up to $120 a ton. In fact, we think given the supply and demand mix, iron ore prices are likely to continue to weaken, even with this recovery in China, to around $80 to $90 a ton end of this year.
Now, what does this mean for the Australian government? We know that Australia is a huge producer of iron ore, in fact, the biggest globally. Yeah. In terms of government revenue, what kind of an impact could this have on the budget?
So the interesting thing is the big impact from this is purely around a price story. Like, we're not exporting any more volumes of iron ore or coal or our gas. So really, it's the price story. And you're spot on correct. Falling prices does mean falling revenue for the government, particularly around tax rates and revenue. But at current standing, the government has put in a budget that the iron ore price would be around 60. Going collapse in iron ore prices that we're seeing at the moment, you could get prices down to $60 a ton. But we think we're getting pretty close to sort of the middling sort of range for iron ore prices. And so in our view, at the end of this year, you'll still see iron ore prices higher than the government's forecast, which means their revenue position will be better. And overall, that does set, not allowing for any increase in expenditure, a bigger surplus than what they're forecasting.
Justin Smirk there speaking with Raina Bosch.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
It's a pretty flat day on the share market today. The S&P ASX 200 up only just by 0.1%, 7,712. For more on the day's market moves, I spoke with Scott Phillips, Chief Investment Officer at The Motley Fool.
Ricardo, thankfully a bit of stability after the biggest fall in a couple of years yesterday. Hopefully a bit of, well, not even optimism, just a lack of pessimism. We'll take that today after a tough day yesterday.
All eyes on tonight's US inflation numbers. What's expected and what's it likely to mean for the timing of the first interest rate cut in the US?
Yeah, they are such good questions. They absolutely link together, of course, because what's expected is a modest increase in monthly inflation. But because of the way these things are calculated, that will bring down the annual rate. In other words, the month we're dropping will be larger than the month we're picking up. That should hopefully continue the decline in annual inflation. Core inflation is still too hot, about 3.7%, according to the experts who were polled. What we don't know is how Jerome Powell will track this data. As always, if there's no surprise in the data, if it's what the Fed Reserve expects, what commentators expect, we should see interest rates come down in the Fed's current timing. If there are expectations that are blown away in one way or the other, either too high or too low, that will, of course, throw the cat well and truly among the pigeons.
Iron ore prices fell 7% overnight. How much of that has to do with China?
Most of it, mate. This is a really big challenge for global commodity markets, for iron ore in particular, obviously, is the continued challenges out of China. Much better growth than almost anywhere else around the world, so that's a positive. The problem is nowhere near what we're used to or what the country itself expects. Now, when you break that down, the challenge for our iron ore miners in particular and for the commodity in general is that demand is seen to be waning. And if it is, lower steel production does mean a slowing down in China. So bad news for iron ore, bad news for China more broadly, and that unfortunately means bad news for the global economy.
While iron ore is down, gold are still pretty strong, and gold stocks having their best day in about a week. What's behind that?
A combination of expectations, I think, if you look at what we just talked about with the global challenges and the interest rate decisions to come, gold often seen as a hedge against both the stock market generally and inflation specifically. There does seem to be a bit of movement around. We've seen Bitcoin, of course, go through the roof. Gold having a bit of time in the sun as well. Largely that question of what do investors expect? What do they need to be prepared for? There are some concerns. See, Jamie Dimon, the CEO and chair of JP Morgan Chase, out today saying possibly a two-thirds chance of a global recession. That's got people a little worried.
Can we just spend a couple of seconds on this ongoing debate about property versus shares, right? The Bureau of Statistics today showed that the total value of dwellings in Australia rose by $624 billion, or 6.4%, right? Compare that with the ASX 200. It climbed more than that, 8.5% over the same period. What do you tell clients when they're deciding between property and shares?
So I'm a shares guy, so people will expect me to say shares and take that with a grain of salt because I will, not because I work for a company that picks shares, but more specifically because the local property market can only grow at the rate effectively of wages over time. We can play with interest rates, we can play with loan valuation ratios, those things kind of push things around, but at the end of the day, your ability to pay the rent or pay the mortgage is what's going to determine prices over the long term. Now, we've had a lot of different things in the past. Moving forward, that's likely to be the most, I think, most likely outcome. Now, think about shares. It's a subset of the business community. Now, if you took a subset of property and then a subset of shares or a subset of businesses, you might have a different conversation. But if property as a whole can only over time go up as fast as wages, yet this small subset, the 1,500-odd companies on the ASX, can grow their profits and have traditionally faster than the rest of the economy, I think shares are probably over the long term the better bet from here.
Finally, where do you see the opportunities for investors at the moment?
Mate, I've been talking about retail for quite a while now, about 6 months, and the shares are up pretty nicely, which is always good, but I think there's still some opportunity left there. If you look at some of the price earnings ratio, some of the valuations of some of our more higher quality, stable, long-term success retailers, think about Harvey Norman, JB Hi-Fi, plenty of others besides, they're on higher PEs than they were 6 months ago, but still really low relative to the long-term future. I would suspect there's still some value left there.
Scott Phillips there from the Motley Fool.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.